Welcome to another episode of Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audioboom, TuneIn, Google Play, anywhere else that you can find podcasts. Make sure you subscribe, leave us a review, tell your friends to subscribe, and check out the other podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network as well. You can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, like us on Facebook at Locked On Bulls. And if you want to advertise with us or have questions you want us to answer in the show, make sure you email us at lockedonbulls@gmail.com. I'm Sean Hyken of The Athletic. With me once again, Cody Westerlund, 670 The Score. I'm back. We're back.
Yeah, brought me back out of the bullpen. The series shifted away to Boston. Now here I come with the Bulls and Celtics back in Chicago. Game 3, Friday night. Wait, and the Bulls lead 2-0. I know that's a surprise to you, the listener, unless you were really, really smart and really, really crazy before the series started.
I don't think even the most optimistic Bulls fan thought they were going to be up 2-0.
Dwayne Wade did not think they were going to be up 2-0 because he was asked about that before practice on Thursday afternoon at the Advocate Center. And Dwayne Wade said, quote, "I'm not going to lie. We're a confident team, but you're not thinking you're going into Boston and getting two. You're just trying to get one. That's your focus. But once you get one, now it's just another game. Now you have to try to get the next one. But I didn't say, hey, we're going to be up 2-0 on Boston coming home. No one thought that." End quote. So, Dwayne Wade, just as shocked as Sean Hyken and Cody Westerlund and the most avid listeners of Locked On Bulls.
Only one other team in NBA history that was an 8 seed has won the first two games of their series in the first round against a 1 seed. The 93 Lakers beat the Suns the first two games. And then this is back when they played best of 5 series in the first round. Phoenix then came back and won the next three games.
Bulls connection, too.
And would then go on to go to the finals where they would lose to the Bulls.
John Paxson connection right there. So there you have it, tying it back. But yeah, This is a shocker. I think the number is about 93-94% of teams that go up 2-0 in best-of-seven series go on to win. The Bulls also obviously have three of the next four games at home, three of the last five in the series, but three of the next four at home, like completely in the driver's seat. And I know we've been talking about this with everyone we run into, Sean. This doesn't feel like a series that's been a fluke. This doesn't feel like a series where the one seed's going to come roaring back. Nothing that has happened from before the series started, I think we went and we said, I asked you, what's the biggest reason for Bulls fans to have confidence in this one? And you said they have Jimmy Butler, the best player in the series. They can put Jimmy Butler on Isaiah Thomas, too, and guard him when they need to. We knew they had a rebounding advantage. Had no idea it was going to manifest itself like this. But all these things the Bulls are doing between those and just the crisp ball movement, like, this has no feeling of the Celtics coming back in any way, in my mind, at least.
No, this is not. I mean, this it's not like these games that they've won because somebody hit some ridiculous shot
that,
gave them one more point than the other team at the very end. Because, like, sometimes you could say, okay, they won this game, but it was, you know, it was just a weird circumstance, or there was a weird foul call that turned it, or something like that. No, they've been the better team, and after the first game, I was in Boston for the first two games of the series. I thought after game one, I was like, okay. The Celtics were obviously kind of emotionally drained because of all the stuff that's going on with Isaiah Thomas, obviously, as you would expect them to be. And they're not going to get 19 points out of Bobby Portis again, probably, in the series. And so I went into game two fully expecting that the Celtics were going to take care of business, maybe not blow the Bulls out, but win by, 8 or 10 points, reestablish themselves as the better team in the series. And pretty much the opposite of that happened.
Hey, I'm the huge idiot. I said, I can't possibly see the Bulls winning a game in Boston in this series. I got the Celtics by 8 or 10 every time they play at TD Garden. Well, that went out the window in a hurry. So I look as much like a goofball as everyone else did here in predicting this. But hey, this is why we love sports. My advice would be, as crazy as the Bulls' regular season was, as frustrating, I think, as it was, I should say, and as uncertain, as crazy as the future could be, probably should be, there's some really big decisions they have coming up this summer, like what to do with Rajon Rondo, is Dwayne Wade coming back, stuff like that. Just enjoy the hell out of this, because, man, like, this is fun Bulls basketball. If they played this crisp of basketball offensively, and maybe all it took was Rondo having enough time to finally gel with people and his teammates, and maybe the Bulls didn't give that enough time to happen through late December. Maybe he did need kind of a kick in the butt to get started again. But if they play like this all year, like Lockdown Bulls would have been so glowing in praise all year, because this is fun basketball to watch, Sean. It's not like they're grinding out 87-83 wins like the Tibbs era in the playoffs. Like, this was cool to watch these first two games.
Yeah, it was. And I mean, if you think about kind of the mindset of most Bulls fans, like there was literally a group on Reddit that was planning a Fire Garpacks rally at a game. That's kind of, you know, pretty much, you know, just judging from our Twitter mentions, obviously the Bulls have a huge global fan base, but based on the ones we interact with, like the emails we get from podcast listeners, our Twitter mentions, people are generally kind of over, you know, the current Bulls regime, and there's been a lot of apathy, and a lot of fans even were hoping that they wouldn't make the playoffs so they get a little bit of a better draft pick. It's okay to feel like, I mean, but what these guys are doing in this series so far against the Celtics, it's okay to just be like, okay,
to maybe, love them.
Yeah, to love them, be like, okay, maybe, you know, this roster wasn't well constructed, because I still believe that maybe keeping these guys together going forward isn't the greatest idea in the world, because I believe that too, but right now, in the moment, in the playoffs, as long as they're in the playoffs, this is fun. This is, you know,
ride the wave.
Absolutely.
You know? Now, the thing I wonder is, we joked about the Bulls are the team nobody wants to play in the first round. And, like, we got a huge kick out of it because we've watched the Bulls 82 times this season before the playoffs started. And we're like, yeah, they're the team no one wants to play until you actually watch them play. And then you'd be like, oh, yeah, they're the team everyone wants to play. But are we almost, you and I, maybe too much in the bubble to realize that they were the team that no one wanted to play? Because I'm not shocked that, like, Dwayne Wade can take it up another level in the postseason. But I think you said off the air today, the Celtics are a team built for the regular season, the Bulls are a team built for the playoffs. I believe you said that earlier. Like, are we too much in the bubble to have seen that, maybe?
Well, I think we might be, and I think, I mean, the thing with the Celtics is that the biggest advantage that they have over other teams is that they play hard, they play together, and in the regular season, half the teams you're playing are either tanking or resting guys or don't have the rotations figured out like the Bulls did, don't have continuity, sure, any of that kind of stuff. Some teams might be on a back-to-back, or you know, and then because of that, in the playoffs, everybody plays hard, there are no back-to-backs, so everybody has time to rest between games. All the coaches are only playing their best players. They're not messing around with rotations and playing 12 guys in 13 minutes like Hoiberg did in that one game against Houston a couple months ago or whatever. And that's just, you know, when that's the advantage that the Celtics have, is that they're well coached and they play hard and they play together and they have continuity. That kind of goes away in the playoffs when the other team has more talent. I mean, Jimmy, like we've said before, Jimmy Butler is the best player in the series. Rondo and Wade have been there before in terms of this playoff experience, and they still are capable of playing very well, even if they didn't do it consistently during the regular season. And Robin Lopez, the Celtics have no answer for him from a rebounding standpoint. He looks like Shaq in this series.
That's a good point. He's throwing Celtics around, basically, like Shaq would run over people. Now, you mentioned Hoiberg and Brad Stevens. I don't think Brad Stevens has coached a bad series.
No.
I don't think he's overreacted yet, and I don't think anything he did deserves criticism, because when you have the better team and you're at home, you go out and do what you've done for 82 games. So I think now is when the spotlight goes on Brad Stevens. But with that said, looking at these first two games, Fred Hoiberg has been the better coach.
Yeah.
Maybe not better coach, but like the decisions he's made have changed the game in ways that Brad Stevens staying with what worked all year ended up being a disadvantage. Because everything the Bulls are doing, I mean, from putting Jimmy Butler, I think he's put him on Jimmy Butler on Isaiah Thomas at just about the perfect time in game one, five and a half minutes left, I think, there in the fourth quarter. I think it was most of the fourth quarter in game two. They are sometimes not putting Jimmy Butler on Isaiah Thomas to start a play, or having Jimmy Butler guard a wing like Crowder or something. But then switching Jimmy onto Al Horford, so if the Celtics run screen and roll, he just switches on to him. Like, there's these little things the Bulls are doing. They're being really aggressive with Isaiah Thomas at the top of the key and outside the three-point line and the pick and roll and everything, and then just ignoring Marcus Smart at times. Like, the things the Bulls are doing, everything's been brilliant, making good sense. That's a lot of credit to Hoiberg, a lot of credit to Jim Boylan, the associate head coach, who also serves pretty much as the defensive coordinator. Like, these decisions they're making, very, very sound, and giving the Bulls a chance to win. Hoiberg giving Rondo, it's like they're on the same page and they know exactly how much freedom and leeway to give each other and what they want to do. When Hoiberg's looking at it from the outside and Rondo's actually executing on the floor, like, Fred's been really good.
And the other thing I want to give Hoiberg some credit for is that he's been willing to... I mean, he has the same rotation. MCW got in a little bit, yeah. But he has the same rotation, basically the same nine-man rotation. And he's been willing to kind of mix and match who plays with who within that rotation, depending on who's good. He wasn't force-feeding Nico late minutes when Nico was awful in game one. He was willing to ride Bobby Portis when he was hot. Game two, Portis was kind of struggling. Nico and Zipser were playing well. He kept them in late in the game. He's been willing to kind of adjust based on stuff like that, which I think is something that, you know, maybe at the past this season, you know, somebody's playing well and, you know, he'll say, no, you know, we're going to just go with our normal rotation and put the guy back in, even if that guy was hot and the other guy wasn't shooting well.
Yeah, now I think the spotlight shifts, like I mentioned, to Brad Stevens, what adjustments he can make. To me, it feels like not playing Amir Johnson more than like 4 or 5 minutes would be a good adjustment. He left open-ended his answer to whether they could make changes to the starting lineup and or just the playing rotation come Friday night, saying basically they're considering it.
Is Jonas Jerebko going to be the Celtics savior?
Well, that's what I was going to say. Apparently they put Jerebko into the starting lineup or significant member of the rotation last year when they lost to the Hawks. You might remember that better than I did.
I actually do remember that.
Okay, apparently he was their savior for a couple games last year, but I guess if that's what you're counting on as a Celtics supporter, that's a really tough spot because I'm going to break some news here right now. Jonas Jerebko is not going to be the man to lead the Celtics back in this series. If they come back, and at this point, I think the Bulls are going to win and continue to probably win pretty easily here, maybe six, but like, I don't feel like this is going to a seventh game. I know we're not into changing predictions, but both I know my prediction's been blown up already, so there's no way Bulls could possibly win in five. And like changing and looking at it, yeah, the Bulls are the better team right now. Like, Jerebko's not going to change that. It's going to have to be Isaiah Thomas, them finding a way to get him more space and solve this issue for them when the Bulls put Jimmy on Isaiah Thomas. It means other people have to step up. Marcus Smart's got to knock down open shots. Al Horford has to be more of a playmaker and facilitator if the defensive attention is on Isaiah Thomas, because Jay Crowder, Smart, and Avery Bradley, really solid basketball players, really good defenders, can knock down open shots, but they're not a guy you pitch the ball to with 8 on the shot clock and say, go make a play. You know what I mean? Like, that's got to be Al Horford and Isaiah Thomas.
Right. The Celtics have one of those guys in their right. Even Al Horford isn't really that kind of guy. He's a very versatile scorer, but he's not the kind of guy. He's a great passer. He's not the kind of guy. Isaiah is the only guy on that roster where you can look at him and say, just go get us a bucket right now. The Bulls have two of those guys in Wade and Butler. And, I mean, I guess...
Rondo, too.
Rondo's been a lot more aggressive looking for his own offense. He's been actually driving the basket and going after his own layups, which has been pretty successful for them.
Yeah, because he, correct me if I'm wrong, but he was one of the poorest shooters around the rim early in the season.
Yes.
I know, and obviously got better at that in that last 13-game stretch I think he played after he got his starting role back and everything. But Rondo, he's something else. Because, I mean, the other day he said that he'd like to return to the Bulls, which brings up the question, now are the Bulls going to bring him back? And
I wouldn't rule it out.
How much do these playoffs and this series play into their decision right now, do you think, Sean? Like, I don't think the Bulls currently know what they want to do in July. Because I know last year, on July 3rd, they still didn't know what they were going to do. So I don't expect that, as we sit here on April 20th, the day before Game 3 of the first-round series, that they actually know what they're going to do in free agency in July and how Rondo's going to be a part of that. But if Dwayne Wade does come back, maybe it does make more sense to stay a little veteran, Ladin, and have that one more year window. Like, I could see that through their prism, like, making sense. I think I'm still in the get Rondo, let him go camp, and turn it over to the youngsters and move on as an organization like that. But how much do you think this next week, these next few weeks in the playoffs, if they keep making a deep push, how much does it affect that?
I don't think they have any idea what they want to do at this point, and it's really going to depend on if Wade opt in or opt out, and I think at this point he's going to opt in. But honestly, the idea of keeping Rondo around, just based on, even if they say, okay, they want to give more minutes to Jaren Grant, we want to give more minutes to Cameron Payne once he eventually starts playing next year,
Who said Cameron Payne's going to get on the floor for the Bulls next year?
They traded for him because they think he's their point guard of the future.
He might be their 15th best player again next year. And Fred might build up a lot of credibility here and just
where he can just say
more leeway to be like, nah, he's inactive on opening day next year too. Like, I just made the Eastern Conference Finals or the Eastern Conference Semifinals and beat a one seed with this team that you put together that made no sense whatever, and I figured it out late in the year by not playing this guy who was bad.
But I think just you know, just because of how invaluable Rondo has been in terms of helping these young guys out, keeping him around just for that might not be the worst idea in the world. And he might be, even if it's just a thing of like, you know, maybe he's going to not play much, he's going to come off the bench, he's going to maybe have a secondary role and be more and more of a mentorship role. He's not making $14 million from anybody else even after this season. Because Every team has another point guard already.
Yeah, so for the Bulls, it'd be a $3 million buyout or so, I think.
$3 million buyout, $14 million if they keep him.
Yeah, so that's like essentially a team option, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
In that regard, because you can get out of it with limited financial commitment there. But I mean, back to the basketball part, it's just fun watching Rondo play basketball right now. Like, every pass he makes, it's like perfectly timed. Like, in game two, at least, just pass after pass after pass. There was that, like, 3-on-2 in transition where he could have pushed hard to the hoop and maybe dished the ball off. I think Zipser was running with him and someone else, I think Nico maybe. And he could have pushed, but instead, like, he put it kind of in neutral and just coasted a little bit and let them go. And then he drew the defender, and then he dished it back to Jimmy Butler for a three-pointer trailing. And it was like a brilliant play because you got Jimmy Butler a wide-open three instead of Nico or like Zips or a layup that's kind of contested at the rim. And even if Jimmy misses it, like, now you got two or three guys under the hoop ready for the rebound. And I just think every single button Rondo is pushing out there has been almost perfect offensively so far. And I can't believe that I'm saying that, because we watched him for a long time and it didn't work. And now he's doing everything right in that regard. And I can't figure out an explanation exactly. And do the Bulls even have one other than just continuity, taking time? Like, did it really take 82 games to figure it out, maybe?
Or did he just flip a switch? I don't know. This is playoff Rondo. This is vintage. This is Celtics Rondo.
Are Bulls fans going to be able to get behind a Bulls team that just flips the switch, goes 500 and flips the switch for the playoffs? Like, if the Bulls make the Eastern Conference Finals and turn into a veteran team that flips the switch,
then at that point you have to be like, hey, you know what? They did beat the Cavs all 4-0.
Like, it's such a whip around for Bulls fans at all points in time.
Especially because Rondo is somebody that the Bulls fans, like, and going back to that series in 2009 in the playoffs, like, Rondo has generally been a guy.
A villain.
He's had, you know, he's gotten into stuff with Joakim Noah before. Like, he's generally been a guy before this year that Bulls fans have hated. Now he's kind of, you know, ever since that Instagram thing where he was kind of the one sticking up for the young guys, and then the way he's handled the benching and stuff, like, he's become kind of a sympathetic figure in this whole thing, which I don't think anybody saw coming, given the way the last few years have gone for him.
Such a turn of events in that sense. I did think that the first two games of the series, well, first of all, it made me feel better. And the most important thing, not that the Bulls won, but that they made me feel slightly better about something I wrote once upon a time. Mm-hmm. When I wrote, like, what the haul for Jimmy Butler should be in a potential Bulls-Celtics trade, right? And I think I wrote 2 draft picks and 2 players.
You don't think that you don't think that just Jay Crowder and Terry Rozier is going to get it done after watching this series?
No. But there was a time there where I was thinking, you know, maybe if the Bulls can just get like a top 3 pick for Jimmy Butler, they should do it if they want to rebuild, move on. And I still understand that thinking. And you know I love Lonzo Ball and everything. And the fact that if you draft a really good player who's a multi-year all-star, you can keep him for 12 years under the new CBA probably and everything. That's a different discussion. But, like, just it's nice to know that the trade value of Jimmy versus Celtics has tilted back in favor of what I thought it was before. Watching these first two games, like, the Bulls looked like geniuses last summer now for saying no to the Celtics offer of what is going to be Crowder. And then the number
3 pick last year, yeah.
Chris Dunn and maybe another player, like, that's not close to value for what Jimmy Butler is providing in this playoff setting. Like, if your goal is to win a few more regular season games and, like, be consistent in the regular season every single night, I think those 3 guys might help that. But guess what else you can just do? Just go out and sign 2 other guys who try really hard in free agency who are cheap that can do that around Jimmy Butler, and you're in a better scenario. So I think The way the Bulls were so lackadaisical in Hoiberg's rookie coaching season, and again for much of this year and year two, I think that fed into the need for change and like some of those Bulls Celtics trade discussions. Like, you know, you're going to get Crowder and Bradley and Smart, whoever they send your way, like playing so hard every night and generally being pretty smart basketball players, but the value's not even close. Like, Jimmy Butler is several levels above Jay Crowder out there right now.
And on the other side of it, how dumb does it look that the Celtics didn't do anything at the trade deadline to improve it? And I'm not even talking about necessarily making this huge trade and putting those Brooklyn picks on the table and going making taking a huge swing and getting a guy like Paul George or Jimmy Butler, because that's not as simple as it sounds. But
you're talking like just getting a Lou Williams, someone else not who even can create off the dribble?
That or
someone like that.
Well, that or somebody like Nerlens Noel or Yusuf Nurkic. How much if the Celtics had Nurkic, how much different would this matchup be?
We're sitting here tearing up the top seed. Your line of thought being, oh, they need a big man. Me being like, they just need another playmaker. So can't just put Jimmy on Isaiah Thomas out there. So that's a couple holes there for the Celtics.
We're sitting in the room in behind the media. Room at the United Center where we usually record after the Celtics off day practice, and I was listening to Avery Bradley talking, you know, during the media session, and he was saying, you know, we can't panic, we have to just kind of sit back and calm down, and you know, our backs are against the wall. But the way they were talking, like, I mean, compared to the way that the Bulls were talking, they were talking about, oh, we're playing together, we know we really believe in each other, we can do this. They're talking like the one seed. The Celtics are talking like the eight seed with nothing to lose.
Yeah, the Celtics, I thought they handled themselves calmly.
Yeah.
But you could tell they were frustrated, and they tilted toward that calm side rather than, there was not a shred of cockiness because they know how badly they're getting beaten right now. Like, it doesn't, we already mentioned, like, it doesn't feel like the Celtics here are the better team, but it also doesn't feel like they have that swagger and the ability to retaliate and carry themselves at a higher level than the Bulls. And I think that is because the Bulls are just more physical than the Celtics, and they're getting so beat up. And you're probably not going to be cocky when the other team's being a bigger, badder man. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
So it's a weird vibe with the Celtics. Like, I don't think they're panicking, but you can tell they're frustrated. Like, Marcus Smart made an offhand comment here to reporters that the Celtics keep going to the hoop and they're not getting any foul calls. And then the Bulls grab the ball and go the other way on a fast break with a man advantage, because whichever Celtic runs into the hoop is getting blocked and fouled and falling on the floor and can't get back on defense. And that's feeding in to the Rondo leading the break and everything. And it's like, okay, whatever, Marcus Smart. That's completely off base. I thought the officiating has been very, very good in the series so far.
I haven't noticed
two games. I think it was 19-19 free throws each team shot in game two, actually. Like, it's just, that's not anything. That's like a boogeyman, basically, for Marcus Smart making that up.
Well, right. This is not the kind of disparity that, you know, there was in that Spurs-Grizzlies game. Shout out to David Fizdale.
Yeah, take that for
take
data.
Take that for data. I actually like You're Not Going to Rook Us better than I like Take
That is,
for
that
data.
That is pretty good. You're Not Going to Rook Us.
And that whole thing was just fantastic. And we actually, that shoot around in Boston before game two, we asked Dwayne Wade about that, because David Fizdale was an assistant with the Heat when he was in Miami before he got the Grizzlies job. And Dwayne Wade basically said that there were multiple times when he was in Miami that Fizdale would have to be restrained because he was going to go hard at the officials, because he's just that passionate of a guy.
That's so good. Eric Spoelstra didn't even have to be the one to flip out because his assistant would.
And then I also read Mike Conley said that all the players chipped in to pay the fine that David Fizdale
That's nice of the highest paid player in NBA history to chip in
That $30,000 fine probably means a lot less to him than David Fizdale.
He's probably got $151 million more guaranteed dollars than David Fizdale does on his contract, apparently, or $150 million more. So nice of Mike Conley, great guy in that case.
Have you watched the rest of the playoffs?
A little bit. You know, fell into the wormhole of writing and working after Bulls games still, and then watching the Blackhawks on off nights still. Can't believe in Chicago that the Bulls are actually the team that's going to go farther in the playoffs than the Blackhawks. It's
the Blackhawks,
a 3-0 deficit.
The Blackhawks might get swept as the one seed, and the Bulls might sweep the one seed as the 8 seed.
Shocking.
Like,
absolutely,
I don't think
shocking.
A single person in the city of Chicago would have seen
what
that.
What else stuck out to you in the playoffs?
Bucks-Raptors has been a lot of fun.
Giannis
is fun. Playoff Giannis is amazing.
Yeah, and the Bucks could have stolen game 2-2 in Toronto. Like, that really could have been a thing. And he's going to – I mean, he's already a monster, but I just –
He can't He can't shoot yet. Once he learns how to shoot,
I like his ability. I mean, he's such a good passer and so long that, like, I feel like he fits really well at the end of games too, because it can slow down, and his style of play and his unique attributes, having so much length and the ability to take, like, one step from the three-point line and dunk, like, it's really going to serve the Bucks well for I assume they'll keep him another dozen years,
mm-hmm.
next decade. It's going to serve them really well late in games because he's going to be able to consistently get them really, really good looks because there is, I don't know who in the NBA can guard Giannis one-on-one, seriously. Like LeBron? Like Draymond, maybe? Kawhi? There's very, very few people that can do that, so... I like the Bucks in that series. I do.
I do too. And they're going to give the Cavs some. I mean, I still think the Cavs are going to win in the second round. We're getting ahead of ourselves here, but like, they're going to give the Cavs a series.
All right, you heard it here first from Sean.
I think they could take that to 6 or 7.
Sean, tell us what's going to happen in Game 3 between the Bulls and Celtics.
I picked Celtics in 6 originally. I no longer think that's the case.
Yeah.
I think the Bulls win tomorrow. I think the Celtics win game 4. We go back to Boston, and the Bulls get it done in game 5.
TD. The Celtics aren't even going to win a home game in the series.
Gentlemen sweep. That's my pick. What's yours?
You know, I think I would pivot to the Bulls in 6 now. I don't see the Celtics, honestly, falling behind 3-0. I think they have to play their best game of the year on Friday night, and I think they're going to come something close to it. I think some of that three-point disparity, and by disparity I mean the fact that they had like equal three-pointers the other night, but the disparity of the Celtics usually being a better three-point shooting team than the Bulls, I think that will show more at some point here, probably game 3, because if it's not sooner rather than later, Boston's absolutely screwed. But I think the Bulls are going to get a split here in Chicago and just split the final 4 games and probably take the series would be my guess. But I think Game 3 is going to be really fun. And I say this on 2 counts. 3 counts, because the Bulls are playing their best basketball. The Celtics have to play their best basketball. And the other thing is, hey, look, United Center crowds have been anywhere from bad to dull this year most of the time. And I expect Friday to be crazy because I know Bulls fans love their basketball. I've been at the United Center when they've had great environments. Cavs-Bulls a few years ago in the playoffs. Just absolutely great stuff. And you've seen it on certain nights, certain games sometimes when they fall behind 15 points and then the crowd gets a little into it on the comeback or something when Jimmy is putting the team on his back and stuff. They've been really good. But like because the Bulls were so stagnant as a team for so long, the United Center, I understand why it wasn't electric. But I expect it to be electric Friday. I expect it maybe to be one of the most fun games of the year that we cover.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I'm expecting this crowd to be – I mean – A good Bulls crowd is one of the best crowds in the NBA. We've been seeing that a lot less lately because this team hasn't really given people much to get excited about, which I think most Bulls fans would admit, and that's why the crowds have been a lot of empty seats. Crowds have seemed kind of checked out. There have been some boos. But I feel like, especially with this run being like, you can sell this to fans as, hey, we're the 8th seed and we might beat the 1 seed.
Yeah, underdog story.
Yeah, they're the scrappy underdogs who have Rajon Rondo and Dwayne Wade and Jimmy Butler.
They have the best player in the series, the biggest bully down low, the 3-time NBA champion in Dwayne Wade, a terrific postseason performer in Rondo. Yep, they're the underdog. Sounds like an underdog to me. So what I need you Locked On Bulls listeners to do, in addition to subscribing and following us on Twitter and everything, is show up at the United Center and make it electric, because my predictions have been absolutely awful, as you well know, so far in this series. But I did predict it will be electric, and that's the one thing that you can personally control. So show up at the United Center and make sure it's lit so we have more fun. We see fun basketball. Bulls up 2-0 in the series. We'll have a podcast for you after the game on Friday night at the United Center. You can follow Sean on Twitter at Hyken, myself at Cody Westerlund. Locked On Bulls is on Twitter and Facebook by its name, if that's how you like to navigate to the podcast. Most of all, please subscribe to the podcast for us.
That's right. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Audio Boom, TuneIn, Google Play, anywhere else you can find podcasts. Make sure you subscribe. Go on iTunes, leave us a 5-star review, tell your friends to subscribe. Check out the other podcasts in the Locked On Podcast Network as well. Check out Locked On Celtics if you want to get the Celtics perspective on this series, and especially if you want to hear a podcast with the greatest theme song I've ever heard for a podcast. Like, they actually got a rapper, some Boston rapper, I forget his name, to do a theme song where he says, like, I stay waiting on this podcast, like receiving the Nets pick, and it's so good. And Jay King, who's here in Boston with us, I'm sure we'll do something with him on the podcast at some point during the series, but he's great. John Corrales, Sam Packard, who do that podcast, is great. Check out any of the other podcasts on the Locked On Network for the teams that are also still in the playoffs, as you wish, and we will be back with you guys after Game 3 on Friday night. Thanks for listening.